I'm glad you can join us at WMUK.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It's a wonderful city in central North Carolina, and I had a lovely childhood there.
What did you dream of being as a child?
Really, as a child, I dreamed of traveling. I loved reading. I loved reading about different places around the world. And as a child, I really just wanted to travel. And at the time, that seemed to be an impossible dream because I was from pretty humble circumstances. So I didn't really know how I was going to make that dream come true, but I simply prayed on it and I held fast to that dream. And to date, I have been to 17 different countries.
When you say that you came from humble beginnings, could you expand on that just slightly?
Sure. Nothing particular. My parents were working class. I grew up in a mixed race, working class neighborhood. Nothing particularly, you know.
There just wasn't a lot of resources for traveling, and traveling is expensive.
Absolutely.
Did you have a lot of exposure to art as a youth?
I did not, actually. There was a community center near my house that was operated by the city. And in that community center, there was a wonderful woman named Jean Parks. And she hosted little arts and crafts classes. So I did a little hand building with ceramics. I learned how to macrame there. I did some painting and drawing. Nothing close to the level of instruction that we offer at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. But it was important to me. It was an important outlet for me. I am from a family of makers. My grandmother was a quilter. She taught all of her daughters to sew. She taught me to sew. One of my aunts did a lot of crochet work. So as a child, when I was in the second grade, I learned to knit and crochet and embroider. So those were the kinds of things that I did as a kid.
Are you an artist? Would you call yourself an artist? Or just kind of more a connoisseur of arts?
I am an appreciator and a lover of the arts. I am not an artist by any stretch of the imagination.
When was the moment that you can recall that you said, I'm going to have a career in the arts?
I never expected to have a career in the arts. While I was an undergraduate at Yale, I was a math major, applied math with a concentration in operations research. And as a sophomore, I began working at the Yale Center for British Art in the finance department. And I've always been a precocious person. I've always asked a lot of questions, and I would ask a question and then that would lead to an assignment somewhere in the building. So I had a wonderful experience there, and I really got to know many different parts of that institution. But still, while I worked there, I didn't have an intention to become a museum administrator. But the director there saw something in me, Duncan Robinson, and he simply felt that this was a career that I needed to pursue. And we had many heart-to-heart conversations about this in his office. And he made me promise that I would take an art history class. And I took an art history class, and I loved it. It was an African art history class by the great Sylvia Arden Boone, who was a tremendous, tremendous scholar. She and I became very good friends, and she was a role model for me. Duncan was a role model for me, and he also introduced me to, at the time, Mimi Neal. She was the director of the Yale Art Gallery. She's currently Mimi Gates. Mimi became my advisor, and towards the end of my junior year, I was convinced. I simply loved the people who were around me. I loved the people in the museum. And both of those institutions at Yale opened me up to a world that I had never been exposed to, and those institutions allowed me to self-actualize in ways that I had never anticipated, because I could now contemplate ideas that could only be expressed visually.
So up to that point in your junior year, you were still a math major.
At the end of my junior year in college, I was a math major. At the beginning of my senior year in college, I was an art history major. By that time, I had taken enough classes in art history to make that possible. And at Duncan's recommendation, I had also studied art and architecture in London at the Paul Mellon Center. So I did have quite a bit of experience in art history at the time, but that summer between junior and senior year was a pivotal summer for me. I also had to explain to my parents, who were really expecting a math major in 1 year.
What were you hoping to do with your math major, out of curiosity?
Well, that was part of the reason why I changed my major, because I really wasn't sure. And I had been exposed to some job opportunities, but none of them really seemed to excite me. The idea of simply being an analyst or an educator, even though I consider myself an educator today, those ideas really didn't excite me. I just really loved math. I loved numbers. And at that level, math is also very conceptual and very poetic. And so those are things that I love as well. And those are things that I now find a creative outlet in through the arts. So for me, it was a very easy transition.
What it sounds like is by the time you hit your senior year, you had actually taken so many classes that it didn't mean that you had to stay much longer.
Oh, I didn't stay any longer. I had taken enough classes in art history to finish the major in a year.
Excellent. Excellent. I think it might be appropriate to note right now, and I don't know if this plays into it at all, but I know that you are the first African American to head the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. Did you think that this would be a hard field to pursue, being an African American?
I did not. Because I pursue the arts with passion, and because part of my personal mission is to bring people together through the arts. Mm-hmm. So this seemed like a great opportunity, a fantastic, tremendous opportunity for me. I wanted to work with a major American art collection, and I wanted to even experiment, if you will, with how these works of art could really unite a community such as Kalamazoo. As I mentioned earlier, my training really began in two institutions that did not focus on the art of Africa or the African diaspora. While I was at Yale, I had taken, you know, art history courses in American art and European art. I didn't study the art of African American artists. I did fortunately study African art with Dr. Boone, but that was it was a tremendous experience, but it wasn't a mainstream type of experience, if you will.
It sounds like you had a great number of mentors as an undergraduate. That seems like a really high number. So I was just curious, of any of those mentors, were any of them African-Americans?
So Dr. Boone was African-American. She's currently deceased. The other two mentors perhaps would not have been obvious for someone like me. Mm-hmm. but they were great people. They really affirmed my talent, and they exposed me to opportunities. And I think it was because I was so hungry for knowledge. There just came a point in my undergraduate career where I felt that my world had opened up, and I just wanted to know as much as possible about the world of art, the history of art, and the practice of museum studies. And I just pursued it relentlessly. And so as I asked questions, they were always there with answers, and they happened to be people that I got to know on a personal level, and they became people that I respected and admired. And I also began to see a unique opportunity for myself. I knew that I was from a community that hadn't been exposed to these ideas or these great works of art. And in many ways, the great museums of America have been off limits to many segments of our population. And so I felt that I, in particular, wanted to use the knowledge and skills that I was learning to empower other people. And that began to shape my journey.
I notice that your academic training is really quite broad. You have a Master's of Arts degree in liberal studies from Wake Forest University, but you also have a bachelor's in art history from Yale University with a concentration in museum studies. And you've done some studying abroad, I believe, at the Paul Mellon Center in London. Paul Mellon Center in London, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And you studied conservation and let's see if I can say this.
Connoisseurship
at the Yale Graduate School and British Art and Architecture at the Paul Mellon Center in London.
I will study anything. Perhaps that is even a fault of mine, but I really just have a very curious mind, and I'm willing to read about and learn about anything at all.
Did you always know that you wanted to go into arts administration?
No, but my choices were limited because I am not an artist.
Right, exactly. You're not an artist. How did you decide that you wanted to go to the very highest levels of overseeing an institution? And actually, what was that career path in doing so? You were the director of the Diggs Gallery at Winston-Salem State University.
Absolutely. So,
and that's in North Carolina, for those people who don't know that, in Winston-Salem.
From a very early age, I think I have always been attracted to profound beauty. And that is where my love of travel came into play. I wanted to travel the world because I wanted to see the most beautiful things on earth, whether made by nature or humanity. That love of beauty is what attracted me to the museum, and that is what gave me the purpose of wanting to share that beauty with others. Within our society overall, we live with different levels of feelings of safety and different levels of access to things that are just beautiful. And for me, there is something that is uplifting and inspiring and gracious about beauty. And it makes me want to share. So I've always been attracted to museums, places where I can find some of the greatest examples of beauty. And I love large encyclopedic museums that really house examples of the best of humanity from around the world and throughout the ages. So I think that is how I chose my career path to work in the museum setting.
What I'm asking is, did you immediately after getting your master's degree or your degree in art history, was your first job at Diggs?
No, it was not.
What was your career, specific career path?
Toward the end of my career at Yale, I sat down with my advisor, Mimi Gardner-Gates, and I said to her, I want to be a museum director. I am convinced that this is what I want to do. Give me some advice as to how to pursue that path. She said, if you want to be a nonprofit director or museum director, go get a background in finance. And I said, okay, fine. So I went and got a job at Wachovia Bank as a banker. And I worked there for 5 years in corporate lending, large corporate lending, and cash management. And I got a wonderful foundation in finance. I had been working with the Diggs Gallery. I had served on the board of directors there. The current or the then director left, and the university approached me and they said, we know you have the background to do this job. You've been a dedicated volunteer here. We need an interim director. And we worked out a deal where I could become the director of the museum there for 1 year. The director there at the time got another opportunity in New York and left the institution.
Okay, so you were at the Diggs Gallery there for 15 years as the director.
Yes.
But during that time, you had a lot of accomplishments, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. You increased the permanent collection by 20%, and that you increased student participation there during your tenure. I think you started there, in 1999? And it went from, 20% to 83% by 2010. One of the things that you seem to like to do and you did there is try to bring in different demographics that aren't used to going to the museum. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you did there?
Sure. Well, the academic setting was great for me because I love to share ideas and I love to see other people sharing ideas. I love to listen to people and I love hearing about people's life experiences and perspectives. And through my work at Diggs, I really began to truly understand on a very deep level how art can be both connective and healing. I witnessed people working through major life issues while examining and unpacking a work of art. I saw how art could bring together people from disparate backgrounds and from different political perspectives, different modes of thought in general. So at Diggs, I really worked to position that institution as the hub of a kind of creative center. And I really wanted people in that community to feel that they always had a place to go to take a break from the challenges of everyday life, from the hustle and bustle and busyness of everyday life, and that they could use the museum as a place to think, to reconnect, to reset, to learn, to grow, to share with others. And so my work there really became centered around that type of practice, understanding that a collection within itself has a heart and soul. Mm-hmm. And how can we make these works of art mm-hmm. come alive for the people who are here to enjoy them?
You would break with convention at your last place. Can you kind of give an example of that? Like there's art, but then there's performance art, and that you would do some of that. And I'm thinking like it was a performance you brought in about the Underground Railroad.
Oh, yes. Well, I broke with convention so often, and I don't even realize that I'm breaking with convention. You know, there's a part of this that comes very intuitive to me in terms of figuring out the needs of the community and the audiences that we serve. However, with that particular project, I wanted to be very deliberate. I had the benefit of a stellar education. Even in the public school system in Winston-Salem, I felt that there were teachers around me who protected and nurtured me and who really affirmed me and helped me along. And I realized that everybody within that environment did not receive the same benefit. So with that particular project, I specifically wanted to give a gift to the students and not the particular teachers, but in honor of the teachers there who had supported me. And so this Underground Railroad opera seemed to be the perfect way to do that. And we hired a professional opera singer, and I asked Dr. Maya Angelou, who is also someone that I respect highly.
Didn't she teach there?
No, she taught at Wake Forest University.
In North Carolina.
Exactly. But I explained to her why I wanted to do this project and why I felt this was an important gift to the community and particularly an important gift to the public school system there. And she agreed to help me, and she came and she narrated that Underground Railroad children's opera free of charge.
So how did that work? It was a pre-recorded thing?
Oh, no. It was live performance.
It was a live performance, but you said that she was the narrator.
She was the narrator.
Oh, wonderful. And the kids were in the production.
And the kids were in the production. They performed with a professional opera singer, and they performed for other kids in the school system and the community.
You were hired in July of 2014. You were actually recruited for this job.
Yes.
Is that correct? What made you consider coming here?
The board of directors at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts is a great group of people, and I was really inspired by this board. I was very open with the board about the way that I operate, that I do break from convention. I have a museum practice that is really centered around bringing people together, and sometimes that inspires me to be innovative and creative in ways that are not typical for an art museum. And, you know, to a certain extent, I don't have a better word than just to say I'm very grassroots oriented. And I am focused on creating a place for everyone, people from all walks of life. Should be able to come in and enjoy the best of art. And I was very open about that. And they said, that's fantastic. That's what we want here in Kalamazoo. We want you to come and connect this institution and its collections and its school to the community here. So for me, it seemed like a perfect fit.
I told you offline that one of the reasons I was interested in bringing you in is I have noticed that, like you said, being grassroots, bringing kind of different voices in your space. And I'm reading an article that it says when you first started here that you wanted to make the KIA more of a community resource. Can you give me some examples of how you have tried to make that more of a community space? You've had some really different kinds of collaborations.
On February 20th of this year, the community of Kalamazoo experienced a very tragic shooting. It impacted me very deeply, and it impacted this entire community. It really shook us to our core. And I remember on that Sunday, I emailed our team and I said, tomorrow, let's talk about how we respond to this tragic event. And I know for many, it might not seem obvious how a museum might respond. You know, we have works of art on view in our galleries. You know, we have portraits. We have still lifes of flowers. We have nude models posing in adult figure drawing classes. How are we really going to respond? However, we chose to respond from our most generous selves and from our unique position within the community. And we as a team decided that we were going to open up all of our programs for 1 week to the entire community for free to extend the warmth, the peace, the solace, and the beauty of the museum to everyone, and that we were going to encourage our community to use this opportunity as a time to refocus on those things that are most important in life and to focus on our family and our friends and to come into the museum with the people that we care the most about. And that is what happened. And over a very brief period, maybe 5 days or so, over 700 people came into the KIA. And I remember our chief of security was moved by this experience because he witnessed people from throughout the community coming in as families, parents, grandparents, children, grandkids, etc. Everyone was coming as a family. That is how we respond. That is an example of community placemaking. That is an example of why we exist as an institution. That is part of our service to the community. And that extended to the Kurt Newman Art School. The following week, the school hosted its biannual hands-on project where people can come in and they can experiment with different media. And it's a make and take evening. You do a little project, you take it with you at the end of the evening. And normally, some of the activities have a very modest cost, you know, $2, $5, et cetera, which really just covers the cost of materials in some cases. But in this case, the school wanted to also provide some free activities to make sure that everyone in the community could access these experiences, that everyone could have the opportunity to be enriched in some way, and that everyone could use this moment of making as a way to reconnect with self and as a way to express what they were feeling emotionally.
Is the 700, is that a higher number than usual that would come in a given week to the KIA?
Tremendously.
Okay. And also just the demographic of families too. Was that also a little bit different too?
Absolutely.
For our listeners, just to remind them that on that particular date that you're referencing, that's when 8 people were randomly shot in and around Kalamazoo. 6 people, I believe, were shot dead and 2 people wounded who are still recovering. There was also another event I'm thinking of, and maybe you can help me out here, where I want to say that you brought in poetry. It seems like there was lots of groups involved with that.
So we've done several with multiple groups. So one of the things that we've done at the KIA is we've really freed ourselves to be interdisciplinary. And we understand that people can connect with the visual arts on multiple ways through multiple channels. And music and poetry are different channels of connecting with the visual arts. Theater is another channel. So we've used all of those things to connect community members with the arts. We did a wonderful program that was spearheaded by Denise Miller and Michelle Johnson, and I apologize, there were some other poets involved in that activity. But they wrote poetry that was inspired by works of art on view in an exhibition that we hosted called Common Ground. And that exhibition featured works by African-American artists from the collections of the KIA, the Muskegon Museum of Art, and the Flint Institute of Art. It was an incredible, heartfelt, moving, emotional, tremendous experience. The power of their words were unbelievable. Michelle Johnson, you know, who has this incredible knowledge of music, curated this playlist that accompanied the performance that was just outstanding and unreal. And then they also projected images of the artwork on a screen. So the audience experienced this multi-sensory, event, and it was just transformative. Some people thought it was one of the best events we had ever hosted at the KIA. I don't know how anyone can make that claim, but we certainly took that as an incredible compliment. Doing those events that really add layers of texture to the understanding of what people are seeing is helpful because it deepens and broadens one's knowledge of a particular work of art, one's understanding of a particular artist and their body of work. And it helps people broaden their perspective on how art can really influence us, how art can really expand our horizons and change our thinking. I mean, it just opens up new possibilities. So when I look at a work of art, I might see A, B, and C. But when I engage in a conversation with you about a work of art, now I see D, E, F, G. And when we do that as a community, we can see the entire alphabet.
You have also brought in a lot of local artists in a number of different ways. There was an artist from Coloma that teaches a workshop and has work on display. And this art, I'm understanding, is a different kind of art than the KIA is known for. Also, the KIA started a local film series where it had local filmmakers to show their films. Tell me what your thought process was in bringing more local artists in.
Well, one of my important roles at the KIA is to empower our entire team. So I can't take credit for all of these ideas. They emerge from throughout the organization. So I do play the role of coach and cheerleader and supporter in terms of making the resources available for these things to happen across the organization. So our museum education department recognized a need in the community, recognized the fact that area filmmakers really did not have a venue for showing their work and sharing it with the community, and felt perhaps that this was a role we could play as a way to not only support local filmmakers, but really to expose our community to the incredible body of work that's being created in the region. So, and that program has really started to establish its own audience, and you know, it's growing and it's successful in ways that are quite pleasing to us.
Let's talk the future. When you first came on board in 2014, that's when the KIA was marking its 90th anniversary. Coming in, you talked about bringing the voices of youth into your organization as something that you've been wanting to do. What are some of the things you've been doing? And I know you yet have some other things in mind, including a position.
Well, again, it's important to me that everyone in the community is a part of what's happening at the KIA and that we're a part of what's happening in the community. There's sort of this call and response relationship. And so it's very important to me to have young, energetic, dynamic voices be a part of the conversation because our community is changing. And we notice that people of the younger generation have really distinct but also exciting ideas that we need to incorporate into our work. And so part of the strategy to attract them is to diversify our educational platform so that we are offering programs and exhibitions that will appeal to that segment of our population. And for us as an institution to be open and flexible and responsive to the needs of the community. Last Friday night for Art Hop, we had Pokemon in the galleries. And nearly 400 people showed up at the KIA.
And when you say Pokemon, were there pictures of them?
It was Pokemon Go. People came with their cell phones and okay. They played Pokemon Go in the galleries. You're... Also added some art making project. And then we had a little scavenger hunt and you could walk through the galleries and find pictures that represented places where different Pokemon monsters might live. So it was a wonderful and engaging event. We have a license to be experimental. And, you know, I really see us as the hub of creativity in the community. So we have a license to be creative.
I was reading somewhere you're looking to have a curator of family programs. What's the status of that?
Absolutely. So we have hired Candy Waterloo. She is the curator of youth and family programs at the KIA. And her job is to design experiences that, in particular, meet the needs of youth and their families. And notice that I said experiences that meet the need of youth and their families. So it's very important to me that the KIA be a place in the community where young people can grow up, where they can come at birth or at preschool and begin to understand and explore the arts, and that we can take a journey with these young folks that will help them succeed throughout their sort of, you know, careers as youth in our community. We know that the arts helps kids perform better in school. We know that kids who are engaged in the arts are more likely to graduate from high school and go on to college. So there are all kinds of studies that demonstrate the benefit of the arts. So we want to be an active educational partner for youth and their parents in the community.
When did she start?
February of this year.
You want to have a baccalaureate residency program. What is that and when do you hope to start if you haven't already?
So we've already completed our first year of that program. Last year was our pilot year and we had 5 wonderful young ladies participate in that program. I spent 15 years on a college campus and I watched many of our very, very bright art majors graduate without a clear opportunity lined up for themselves. It's not always clear what you do with a painting degree upon graduation. And so I recognize that these young, talented artists needed a place to go to continue to hone their skills and to develop ideas that could yield a portfolio that would prepare them for an MFA program, or they needed a place to develop not only their artistic skills, but their business management skills so that they could become practicing studio artists. The first year of the program was a 7-month intensive study in the Kirk Newman Art School. It was hugely successful. Many of the participants are still connected to our school. They currently teach in our school, or they're connected to the institute in some way. This year, I think we have already accepted 7 students, and perhaps we're waiting to hear back from 2 more that invitations were extended to. And this year, we not only have applicants from some of the area universities, Western, Kendall, Kay, for example, but also universities from other states.
They also get to use the KIA as a studio space.
So they get to use the classrooms in the KIA as a studio space when classes are not in session. We do give them some storage space for their for works of art that are in progress, and we pay for their art supplies. So they receive a stipend to purchase their art supplies.
When they're in this program, do they have to pay for those classes?
They do not. The classes are offered to them. They receive a scholarship, basically, for the classes. And, you know, it's a merit-based opportunity. There is an application process. They are interviewed, and, you know, it's competitive.
What haven't we talked about that you would like to talk about?
You know, one of the things that inspires me about the KIA is that we have a magnificent staff and faculty. The people there really inspire me because they are incredibly committed to the arts and this community, and they will do almost anything to make this institution and this community successful. They're always thinking of new things that we can do to engage people in the community. They're always thinking of new ways to connect with others and to educate people about what we have to offer. And they're incredibly talented. Many of them work behind the scenes so that our patrons, our audience members, our guests don't understand really how some of our programs and our exhibitions truly come to be. But I think I would like to just take this opportunity to thank the incredible team of people who work at the KIA.
This would be a good time for those people who have never been to the KIA, and even those who have, to have a full appreciation of what's offered there within its walls. My understanding is you have 4,600 pieces of art.
We have a lot to offer. So on the upper level, we have 4 galleries where we primarily host temporary exhibitions. 2 of those exhibitions currently are or have received national attention. It's an incredible season at the KIA right now. It's not the time to miss what's going on there. On the lower level, we exhibit more of our permanent collection. It's an incredible American art collection that includes works from the 19th century to the present. We also have the Joy Light Asian Art Gallery on the lower level, and we do both temporary exhibitions and exhibitions from our permanent collection in that space. And then on the lower level, we have the Ethel Ditton Gross Gallery, where we curate temporary exhibitions from our permanent collection and from works of art that we borrow from other artists or institutions. So there's a lot that we offer within the exhibition spaces. We also have the Kirk Newman Art School, which is an incredible resource. The art school has nearly 2,800 students. They are providing instruction in a variety of media, ceramics, jewelry, sculpture, weaving, painting and drawing, glass fusing, and much more, and photography and printmaking and so many other things. It's an incredible resource, and it's an incredibly professional faculty. So that resource within this community is quite rare. Very few communities have a community-based art school operating at the caliber of our Kirk Newman Art School.
Is there a standing local space or not? No.
No, not necessarily. We do incorporate the work of local artists into many of our projects. And of course, we host the West Michigan Area Show on an annual basis. And that's an opportunity for artists from the region to be juried into an exhibition. And they also have the opportunity to win a variety of prizes.
You mentioned that you have two exhibitions that have gotten national attention. Can you quickly say what those are and any major programming that you have coming up?
I should have said three of the four temporary exhibitions that are on view have received national attention, two on the upper level and one on the lower level. So the three are Barbara Takanaga, Waiting in the Sky 2. It's a wonderful opportunity to see fantastic abstract paintings that will take your train of thought from the microscopic to the cosmic. Renee Stout, Tales of a Conjure Woman. Renee is an African-American woman based in the D.C. area, and her work is really centered around African spiritual traditions and the unique wisdom and beauty those traditions bring to the world. Chil Hoonan is an artist from Korea who is based in the Maryland region, and he does these wonderful light boxes that incorporate mirrors that provide the illusion that you're looking into infinity. They are mesmerizing works of art that, you know, people would not want to miss. And then I will mention Fred Wessel, the Fred Wessel exhibition that's also on view. And Fred is one of the nation's leading artist working with the egg tempera medium. It's an incredibly difficult medium to work with, and he is a true master. So that exhibition is not to be missed as well.
What's coming up? Is there something coming up that you'd like to promote?
I would prefer that people go to our website and take a look at the many things that we have to offer. We have regular programs on Tuesdays at noon. We have a series called Art Break that's incredibly popular. About 100 folk come out every Tuesday at noon.
Are those free?
And those are free. We have Thursday evening programs. So the second, third, and fourth Thursday of the month, we're always hosting a program at the KIA. One thing that is coming up that is very special is a community-based collaboration. We partnered with the Merz Tate Travel Club to do a girls empowerment event through the arts. And we have many partners in that collaboration. So in addition to the Merz Tate Travel Club, the Girl Scouts, Girls on the Run, the YWCA Tech Girls, the BACC, the Douglas Center, FIRE, Junior Girls, and I'm sure I'm missing someone, and I apologize right now. But all of these organizations are coming together on September 5th, which is an Art Hop Night. This is free of charge. We will have art-based activities for girls throughout the community to engage in, and you will be able to, the girls who come will be able to connect with other girls in the community. And it's an opportunity for girls who are not affiliated with a particular program to get to know that program and what it offers and some of the girls who are currently engaged in that program. So if they like to get involved, it's an opportunity for them to receive that personal invitation to get involved. And I didn't mention the KIA's own Art Girls, which is a wonderful group of girls who will be represented there.
What is Art Girls? And how long has that been around?
Oh my goodness.
Did that start during your tenure?
No, no.
Okay.
Well before I came, Art Girls is a community-based arts initiative. Mary Whalen leads that program for us. It's a collaboration between our museum education department and the Kirk Newman Art School. And we mentor and work with a group of girls in the community. And over the years, we've chosen various sites that have included the Boys and Girls Club, the Douglas Center, and the like. And they simply do projects that are based in the visual arts and literary traditions over the course of the summer. So the girls will not only make art, but they will also engage in various types of writing assignments.
And they do it at the KIA?
Part of it is hosted at the KIA, but it's a community-based
program.
Mm-hmm. So most of the work takes place at a local community center.
But they're going to be involved with the September 5th event.
And they will be involved with the September 5th event, yes.
That's actually an art hop. And it's worth mentioning that now the KIA is open at every art
hop.
We
love art hop.
So I think people might want to know that. And finally, you have extended hours.
We do have extended hours.
And can you say when those are?
On Thursday and Friday evenings, we are open until 8 p.m. So this gives people an opportunity to come to the KIA after work. We're also open on the weekends. We're open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturdays and noon to 5 p.m. on Sundays. One of the great Saturday morning programs that we offer is a program called Art Detectives, and it is also free of charge. And it's a unique experience for early elementary aged kids and their families, where you will come and the library at the KIA organizes a book that will be read to the kids by Artie the Mouse. And kids love Artie the Mouse. And after that experience, they will have an activity that is in the galleries. And that activity is designed to not only get kids looking at art, but to get parents and kids talking, communicating with each other about what they're seeing in our gallery spaces. And then there's a follow-up hands-on art-making activity in the school for the kids. So it's a wonderful Saturday morning program.
Belinda Tate, thank you for joining us at WMUK.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, and it's my honor to serve this community.